High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Hussein Abubakar Mansour, and if you remember, we spoke to Hussein last week. A reminder, Hussein is an educator, a public speaker, a thought leader, and an author. Last week we explored his journey from wannabe jihadi to today a defender of Israel. Remarkable journey it was. Our absolute pleasure to have you back with us on Chai FM. Hussein, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. The pleasure is all mine. Thank you very much for having me.
No, Eps, I've got a bigger smile on my face. I'm delighted about this. So last week we unpacked you, the man, and your journey. Today I just want to chat about your book a little bit more, A Minority of One. And then the very interesting second sentence, The Unchaining of an Arab Mind. I thought maybe we could unpack that this afternoon, Hussein. The Unchaining of an Arab Mind. Where are you going with that?
The book is basically, it's an autobiography. I'm talking about my story, basically growing up in Egypt in the 1990s, being born in the late 80s, growing up there in the 1990s, and then going through the 2000s and just the tumultuous time in Middle Eastern historical moment up till the Arab Spring. But what I'm attempting to do really is not to tell my story. I'm actually attempting to tell a much bigger story of the Arab world and the Muslim world in large, which is already a very complicated question, with just a dialectic between what is Arab and what is Muslim. And the unchaining of the Arab mind in the title of the book is, for me, first of all, suggesting that the Arab mind has been in crisis. And I think a lot of people would find this statement to be quite agreeable given the circumstances of just the Middle East in the last century. I mean, if you look at just the contribution of that region to the world in terms of the, you know, scientific knowledge, world business, we'll find it's very, very abysmal. I mean, other than oil, really, the Arab countries haven't been contributing a lot to the rising world civilization throughout the last century. And that is due to a certain crisis, in the Arab mind itself. And, I'm trying to also describe a historical moment where I think, that kind of crisis is starting to end. And the mayhem and the chaos of the Arab Spring is just signifies a historical moment where there is the old paradigms are collapsing and there are new paradigms arising. And I'm using my own personal life and the way that I arrived to my conclusion in order to describe that moment.
Something that's absolutely fascinated me. I remember at the time, the Arab Spring, and you spoke about it last week as well, clearly a seminal event in the world, in your life. And yet an event that didn't have the consequences that any of us had hoped for. I mean, none of the democratization, none of the liberal values. Right. Although, am I asking you the question from such a Western perspective that I'm not even asking the correct question? I don't know.
You're absolutely right. I think you have your answer right there. I think a lot of the problems that goes into understanding that part of the world are built into a lot of the Western assumptions, the nature, you know, I would say at the rock bottom of it, human nature, assumptions about human nature itself and assumptions about, kind of what is a good life and what is a good political system and what are the goals of nations. I mean, and those assumptions, I think, the apex or the epitome of those assumptions were, the subject of the book of Francis Fukuyama, The End of History, in the mid-90s, that basically assumed that, human history is ending because, you know, liberal democracy is just the ultimate end that everybody seeks and everybody's going to get there. And there will be no more conflict. And I think those kind of Western, very, very Western-centric assumptions about societies and about culture are the main culprit in the gross misunderstanding of specifically the Middle East, because the Middle East is a cultural continent of its own. It has its own, it moves in its own orbit, whether socially, politically, and intellectually. And we can just talk about the immense, like many of the immense problems, on that cross-cultural understanding. For example, I mean, one of the main examples, is a failure of many Westerners, especially I'm talking about very highly educated Westerners, you know, academic institutions, in understanding the phenomena of Islamic jihadism, for example. Do those people really believe the things that they say they believe? Are their actions more motivated by, you know, socioeconomic, marginalization and so on and so forth? Is it motivated more by, political despotism in the region? I mean, you will have all of those different answers that just so show an utter confusion in understanding, that cultural content.
Yeah, no, it's completely incredible. I'm just thinking back to the Iranian Revolution, to toppling Saddam in Iraq. Every time that those of us in the West saw this happening, we thought, here's the chance for something good to happen. And it just never did. So maybe it is time to go back to basics and reevaluate what you think. That having been said, and you come with a really unique perspective on this, where does this leave Israel in the middle of this milieu of different cultural approach to values, the world and everything? Where do you see... Crazy question I'm going to ask you, but how's this going to play out? Is there a future for Israel in that part of the world?
I think actually in this regard, I might be actually an idealist or an optimist, but I think actually Israel played a significant role that I think that Israelis themselves are unaware of, and will continue to play a significant role in the social and political evolution of the Middle East. And I think Israel actually has a big future in the region, more than Israelis themselves know. And this has to do with several reasons, a lot of them historical, that have to do with the Middle East itself. If I can just briefly mention one point, and just a significant contribution that Israel made to the region. So we have to understand that when we talk about the Middle East, we're talking about one of the most, if not the most, ancient societies and political organizations in the world. If the history of mankind is a history of writing, then the history of the Middle East is half of human history. And I think it's very, very important to put that in perspective. We're talking about ancient philosophies, ancient identities, ancient political organizations. Arabic and Hebrew together are the two most ancient spoken languages in the world, and that should already tell you a lot. This is a very, very complex region with a very complex history. And for thousands of years, the Middle East really was subjected to a certain kind of political organization that we can describe as imperialist. The idea of a national identity being involved in political organization was really absent from the Middle East for thousands of years, without exaggeration. One could even say starting from 3500 BC with the rise of the Assyrian Empire. And that kind of imperialist nature continued well into late antiquity with the rise of Islam and the rise of the successive Islamic empires up to the Ottoman Empire. And the end of the Ottoman Empire, the last century, was the first moment in Middle Eastern history in thousands of years where there was no imperialist power that is forming the main form of political organization. And the idea of national identities as the main catalyst to political behavior was not an intuitive idea for many Middle Eastern nations. And this is why you had the urge to form pan-identities, whether in pan-Arabism or pan-Islamism. Typical characteristic Middle Eastern fondness for those pan-identity dreams. And Israel accidentally entering into the Middle East, organic, or the reintegration of the Jewish people into the organic build of the Middle East, basically disrupted that cycle of pan identities and made it impossible. I mean, Israel practically defeated pan-Arabism in 1967. Israel is the main power that's capable of stopping the imperialist Iranian hegemonic aspirations, and so on and so forth. And smaller countries like the UAE, like Kuwait, smaller rising national identities would not have been able to survive in the Middle East if there was no such a strong deterrent power as that of the IDF that can challenge those kind of major imperialistic Middle Eastern native urges from rising. And I think that's one way that Israel helped the modern Middle East to develop an actual national consciousness.
Wow, that is absolutely fascinating. Tell me something, because we are way out of time, but there was no way I was going to stop you there. Your book, if we want to buy it, where do we go? Where is it available?
It's available online on Amazon. It's called Minority of One, The Unchaining the Arab Mind. And I hope some of your audience would like to read it, I hope they can gain a perspective and a kind of a novel insight into Arab societies and Middle Eastern societies in general.
Hussein Abu Bakr Mansour, I don't know how to thank you. I had about 40 more questions, but they'll have to wait for another time. Thank you so very much for being with us. I can't tell you how much we appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.